Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, September the 12th, 254th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from the Harbor District, we've got Commissioner Mike Wilson with us.
Hi there.
Hey.
This time you remembered Harbor.
Well, yeah, I just started with Harbor and forgot the others. It made it simpler for me.
That's right.
This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of the things that are going on in the Bay and around the Bay as there's, well, it kind of seems like it's been a theme for the last month and a half or so to talk about infrastructure, some of the projects that are going on, because
This
is construction season. Now, you might say, well, yeah, great, but underneath the water, there is no season.
Well,
perhaps you're right, perhaps you're not. We'll find out if you are or not when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from John Kennedy. Quote, leadership and learning are indispensable to each other.
Sure.
You okay with that? I don't think he's going to come back and really contest your opinion on it. But
No, I think it sounds totally reasonable.
Oh, well, I'll have to find another quote if it sounds reasonable. Mike, what's the biggest challenge of infrastructure with the Harbor District?
Ooh, well, there are several challenges that we have. And one is the lack of a public docking facility is one big challenge to us. Certainly transportation, landside transportation in and out of Humboldt Bay is another one. And then really the channels themselves, keeping the channels, not just the channels, but also the marinas dredged. And you're right, you know, it's a lot of the infrastructure that we talk about is underwater and not seen until, of course, it gets high enough to be seen, and then it becomes a problem. So
you mean the new island in the middle of the bay?
Right. For instance, I mean, and certainly dredging the main channel, the entrance is always a challenge. That it shoals, meaning sand and gravels collect in the channel itself. It sometimes unexpectedly, sometimes with a storm, and that can cause what's called draft restrictions, meaning that the depth of the ships coming in can be restricted and. Oh, that
scrape bottom.
Well, you don't want
their own barnacle scraping program.
You don't want bumping bottom. That's not what you want to have happen. That's a bad thing, and what it restricts is really the load capacity of those ships. When we're talking about, especially right now, we're mostly exporting logs, and so it can impact that. And you don't want to have to light load a ship. It makes it inefficient to come to Humboldt Bay, which is already a bit pricey compared to some of the others. So yeah, that's a short list of some of our but you know what, government in anywhere in the world really doesn't have infrastructure needs almost all the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's mm-hmm. challenges in good times and in bad. There's certainly,
it's continuous. Yeah.
When we think of an onshore infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
water system, okay, you guys got a lot of water,
yeah,
under the water, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any concerns about others' infrastructures that are using the bay as point A to point B?
Well, not necessarily in bay necessarily, but when we start talking about sea level rise, which is something that is coming, there may be, and I suppose some people want to debate whether it's human of origin or not, but we've been measuring, but human beings have been measuring sea level rise now for a century, and it is occurring, and the rate does seem to be accelerating. So to plan for that is hard to do because it's so fundamental, and so even though it's slow, it's still unexpected in some regards, and we don't even know quite what it is. We plan for, or the state has is asking everyone to plan for 18 inches of sea level rise in the next to 2050, and possibly as much as 55 inches of sea level rise by 2100. And think about
55 inches?
55 inches, yeah.
That's interesting, because I understand that the snowpack in the Arctic right now is thicker than it normally is.
That could be.
So it's really, okay, fine. 55 inches?
Yeah, yeah.
5 feet?
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't just come from melt. It also comes from temperature changes in the ocean. So if you have an average temperature change go up, the ocean actually expands.
Right. It's like an ice cube.
Right. It actually will expand.
Yeah.
Right.
Or contract if it gets cold. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so it's a compounding factor.
Right, right.
Which is even more challenging.
Oh, right, right. And so when you think about the 101 corridor, or you think about any of the infrastructure along the waterfront.
I'm thinking about the mouth of the bay.
Right.
Bays are a lot bigger all of a sudden.
Well, true. The jetty system, it makes a big difference. I mean, we've all seen...
Probably washes the jetties out.
You've seen the jetty be impacted by waves, big waves in the wintertime. Sometimes it's fun, yet not recommended to go out and take a look at those waves when they're really big.
Not surfing season?
Well, I've seen some people out there surf some pretty big waves. But you're seeing overtopping occur in the current standards. And if you think about what could happen when we have sea level rise to the peninsula, and it's a daunting challenge. And you know, we're, again, as we always talk about, like we always think in Humboldt County, we're isolated in our problems or in what we have happening. But think about that as a broader context around the world and the state. You know, we have a lot of conversations occurring about that. We have a group of people who've been doing a lot of planning around that, and we've been actually taking in some funds from the state to actually do some of that planning. And what's good is in Humboldt County is that the infrastructure at risk seems like a lot to us, but relative to, say, Malibu, theirs is infinitesimally more expensive, and in some ways it makes them actually stick their head in the sand a little bit deeper because of the problem. So we actually get to have some more honest conversations about that in Humboldt Bay.
I would think if you saw a 3 foot, what was the rise during that winter storm a couple years ago when 101 was covered
by
the eucalyptus trees?
Well, it had to have been at least two.
Yeah, it was a high tide,
right,
but compounded, and then we had the storm coming in.
Right, storm surge.
It wouldn't have been 5 feet.
Right.
So you talk about infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You put five feet, even during a storm.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of movement going on.
Right.
That really is an interesting concept to contemplate.
Yeah, and a little scary too.
Yeah, absolutely, particularly if you drive out there.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of infrastructure for the Bay, you look at Humboldt Bay, and you know, let's use a comparable. I mean,
right,
it wouldn't be fair to use Oakland, Port of Oakland, or Santa Barbara, or any of the other big boys, because that's not us at all.
Okay.
Trinidad Bay.
Well, I mean, Humboldt Bay is...
It's bigger.
It's the second largest natural bay in California, so it's a big bay.
Right, but we look at the Port of Oakland, the Port of San Francisco, the Port of Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, San Diego.
I mean,
regardless of the physical size, the infrastructure investment is so different.
You're talking about like in sort of port infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I think more, you think more like Coos Bay.
Coos Bay would be a normal, and I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with Coos Bay enough to be able to follow the discussion. What I was thinking was Crescent City is having their infrastructure redone now because of their
issue. Marina.
And Trinidad. With what the Sherry Heights folks have done over the years.
Right.
Their infrastructure has been reinvested. How do those stack up to Humboldt Bay's?
Well, Humboldt Bay still has larger marinas than either one of those places. Certainly, I mean, even Trinidad doesn't really have a marina. It just has a bay.
More the pier.
And has a pier, which the pier is what has been invested into. Up in Crescent City, certainly after the tsunami, necessitated really a redo of the marina system there. Neither one of those places really has a sort of a port side transportation that even Humboldt Bay has. I mean, Humboldt Bay does have two fairly functional docks, one at Security National's property over in Fairhaven and the other over here in Eureka, Schneider Dock. And they both have some traffic, mostly right now with the export of logs, and there's also fueling that we take in fuel from the fuel barges, and also Humboldt Bay also has a Coast Guard station too. So for our population, we do have pretty good infrastructure, and relative to the fact that we don't really have any rail connectivity to Humboldt Bay that's functional, that's what you might expect. And the reason I reference sort of going north, the harbors that you may look at would be like Gray's Harbor or Coos Bay.
Well, Coos Bay is comparable.
Comparable. And
except they have a functional railroad.
Yeah, sort of. I mean,
we heard it four or five times when we were in town two weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean,
sounded functional.
Well, they're really working on it, and they still have pretty limited traffic, and they're working on trying to get things going there. It only took, I think, about less than $35 million to get it up and running again after the last disaster that they'd have, which is, you know, by comparison to Humboldt Bay, the latest estimate is about $600 million for going north south to get it up to at least standards that would be reliable. So they're comparable yet not comparable.
Have you heard of dollars for the east-west rail line?
Well, our district did a pretty cursory pre-feasibility study to take a look at what is that, you know, to understand. So we understand from a planning perspective what that means. We had some rail consultants take a look at that and look at the north-south at the same time, because it is the context that we understand rail in Humboldt County, you know. And so what we found, or what was, you know, came out of that study, is that to get this north-south up and running to a standard that you would expect, that you would really need.
Functional,
more than just functional, but really, well, functional in terms of reliable, was about $600 million was the estimate. And going east-west was about $1.2 billion, so roughly twice the price. And that's because it would probably be about 190 miles long and at least $5 million a mile or more. And so we compared those two, and then the next question really was, at those levels of financing, it's unlikely you're going to get, you know, a majority of that paid for through grants or anything like that. Because if you look at just what's being paid for that kind of infrastructure, the $100 million and down is probably about what you'd expect. And in bigger populations, maybe you can get more than that, but we're not in that population range. So if you're really financing that, then what kind of traffic would be required to really pay back that financing? And so that was sort of the second part of the report, was to look at that, just, you know, take a look, what would that be? And so, you know, that was a surprising number of trains that we required, the amount of traffic required to support the financing of that. And even the north-south was probably 6 trains a day, meaning 3 trains going each way a day. And so
does that make the allowance for a private partner,
yeah,
public partnership
it
covering
does.
A percentage, even in addition to that?
Yeah.
That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter whether it's public. If it's public and you're doing a public bonding, it still needs to get paid back. And if it's private, it still needs to get paid back. What I'm saying is, like, it's unlikely that someone's going to want a bit paid back for that. And so you're going to have the level of service traffic to drive that model to occur. So then the third question was, and going east-west was, I think, I don't know, 10 or 12 or more trains a day to do that. Then the question was, well, what could provide that those volumes to then supply that traffic, and how competitive would we be within those volume ranges? And so what the study showed was that, you know, some of the bigger volumes are the grains, coal, iron ore. Those are some of the big ones.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
This is the final weekend to get a free iComfort box spring or $1,000 off any iSeries adjustable foundation at Vern's Furniture. Don't miss this super savings opportunity. When you buy any iComfort or iSeries mattress at Vern's, get a Serta Perfect Sleeper Queen mattress set for just $399 too. But the savings absolutely end after Sunday. Get to Vern's Furniture for the free iComfort box spring offer or the $1,000 discount on an adjustable foundation. Vern's Furniture.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time is 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop. This is Mike Wilson from the Harbor District. Mike, we talked a little bit about the infrastructure. That's certainly a big challenge.
Yeah.
Dredging is, I think, probably the one component that we, outside of Woodley Island, mm-hmm. really kind of sort of recognize as part and parcel to what the Harbor District does do on somewhat sort of a regular basis. And it always seems to be seen as a major significant project. But if we don't drive big boats at drag bottom,
right,
we don't know too much beyond that. What is the concept of dredging?
Well, I have to correct you just for a second, which is that we don't do the dredging. In the channels, really, most of what we're doing is advocating for dredging and writing letters and flying out to Washington, D.C. in order to get the Army Corps of Engineers to do the dredging that it's supposed to do. And, you know, they evaluate, their budget's not limitless, and so they have to evaluate and prioritize where and when they're going to do and spend money, really, about, you know, it's really about the money for dredging. And so we're always asking for more budget, more than we are asking for more dredging per se.
Oh, so you don't have to be specific to
We work with the local out of the San Francisco office about strategizing where our budget might be spent. But really, when we're advocating for it at the national level, we're mostly talking numbers. And so somewhere between, you know, $1 and $5 million every year is spent doing the dredging in Humboldt Bay. That's every year. And what they're generally taking out is about, you know, 200,000 cubic yards of soil, actually mostly sands and gravels, to make that happen. And it requires two different dredgers to come through because they both have their specialties of what they can do. And that material is taken about 3 miles out into the ocean and put into a place called Hoods, which is the Humboldt something 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 disposal site, open ocean disposal site, I guess. And so, you know, that's a lot. We do that every year, and it's always a battle every year to get the amount of dredging we need just to get the ships that we want to our docks. Whereas in comparison to the dredging that we do at the marinas is a total of 200,000 cubic yards, but about every decade. The difference is that we have to pay for that ourselves, both the district for its marina and the city of Eureka for its marina. And so that's a whole nother dredging battle. We really have two fronts that we work on. And certainly, you know, everyone who has been around for a little while can remember the sort of controversy and the battle of the last dredging of the marinas and the waterfronts that occurred, and where we, you know, basically suction dredged off the bottom and put into a pipe out towards Samoa and out onto the beach. And we were told pretty no uncertain terms, that's probably not going to be allowable again. So we've been looking at alternatives to that and trying to also reduce our costs if we can. And one concept that we've been talking about with the Corps and others is something called flow laning, where we where what we would do is take the materials that are in the marinas and actually just move them a short distance and put them into the channels. And then basically the on outgoing tides. And then what happens is that settles in those channels on the outgoing tides, or it goes out with the tide. But whatever settles in the channels then picked up on the annual dredge done by the Army Corps. And the Army Corps is picking up as much in 1 year as we do in every 10 years. So it's a pretty insignificant amount to them, but very significant to us in cost. And so we're talking, and we're not the only district on the West Coast that there are other districts that already do this.
So it's not an example of kicking the can down the road. It really just kind of pushing it over so that
it can
the bigger
get
broom
up.
Can clean it up.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so we've been basically shopping the idea a bit around to both, to the regulatory agencies, to our environmental groups, to others as well, so that we can get the people who care about how we do this all in the same room and talking about it, so there's no surprises about something.
Is
like
the
this.
Material mud?
Mostly, yeah. That's a big difference between the stuff that's in the marinas and the stuff that's in the channels. So the thing that's in the channels, the materials in the channels is about 90% sands and gravels, because a lot of it comes in through the bay entrance. And a lot of the shallow water stuff, what settles out there comes from our watersheds in the bay, and it's mostly sediment. So it's really mud.
So there's really would there
Very
be
different.
Any commercial value? In that product, I mean, if you put it up on shore and it drained out, is it landfill usable? Is it good to augment with soil fertilizers, or is it just kind
well,
of sand and gunk?
There's a lot of it when you do it. I mean, even if you're doing...
Well, I was thinking the once a decade.
Yeah, even if you did it once a decade, that's still 200,000 yards, which is the equivalent of 2,000 trucks, dump trucks. So it's hard to manage that from a land-based perspective. If you're doing that annually and had a system that you were talking about that annually, you might have something. One idea that is being considered, but it has expense to it, but maybe could be subsidized in some way, is to actually use that material in doing wetland restoration around the bay in areas that have subsided. So a lot of the lands that have been diked off and used for grazing have subsided. I mean, they've fallen. Their elevation has actually dropped. And so considering sea level rise and those sorts of things, maybe using this material to bring those elevations back up again.
I was thinking the levees themselves. But.
Or the levees themselves, although the material's not what we call cohesive, really.
Sticky?
Well, it's just not like locking rock.
You know, maybe we can get that and get some of the blue goo from
right.
$2.99, put it in a blender. You probably never move that stuff.
Right. Well, it all takes energy, and energy takes money. So
yeah, imagine that.
Yep.
Oh, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m., Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. Mike, in consideration of what the bay is and where things are, when you look at dredging, you look at the West Coast ports, you look at the investment that goes on, how much did we lose? Because I know Les Westfall, Les was very actively involved with the Corps of Engineers and back and forth. And because as a stevedore company, that's their bread and butter.
Yeah.
The fact that we don't have as much activity on the bay, how much more difficult is it to get the attention of the Corps of Engineers, to have those relationships, to work with them as the lead agency with a bunch of this stuff, to keep Humboldt Bay as vital as it can be?
Well, it's the relationship's different for a host of regions, but actually, I mean, the relationship with the Corps has always been good, and they've always been interested in Humboldt Bay, and certainly having a Coast Guard station here really matters a lot in that context. I mean, you know, if you're talking about the amount of tonnage going through Humboldt Bay, it's probably at, you know, 300,000 to 500,000 tons a year or something like that in its current context. I mean, really the maximum was about 1 to 1.5 million tons. So we're probably, you know, only 30% of that. But when it was the maximum was pre the deepening project. So the actual dredging that was done in Humboldt Bay annually by the Corps was less. So now we have
less often or less deep?
Less deep and less volume, because when you have a deeper entrance, you'd have to dredge more. I mean, imagine it's just the physics of it, right? So it just coincidentally, right, the economy of what kept the pulp mills going crashed right at the time when the deepening occurred. So not only did we have a drop in the volume of goods coming through the harbor at the same time as we then have to now dredge more volume.
So why do we dredge deeper and more volume now? Is that just the ship styles that happen?
Well,
or is it the international component?
It was the decision of the board and of the community really to do deeper dredging at the entrance so that we would be what we termed more competitive, so we'd be less likely to have to light load ships, and that would be a good plan. And assuming the world stayed the same, but it didn't, and things out of our control occurred, which then happened to the pulp mills, and now we're in a more precarious situation just because those two things happened. We had the drop in tonnage, and then the increase in the amount of dredging that needs to be done.
Are we in a better position because of having a deep water port to attract potential business coming here in the future? Or should we allow it to be shallower and not worry about some of those larger ships?
I don't think it's like an either or in that thing. I think that there's kind of a spectrum of what you could look at. One question might be is, do we concentrate our deeper draft stuff closer to the mouth and try to be more sustainable in the amount of deep draft that we maintain? Certainly having deep draft makes you more competitive, and we're going to work as hard as we can to maintain that status, especially for the channel and the docks that are operational currently. That's our focus. As a matter of fact, we don't even get all the money we want from Army Corps in the annual dredge, but when we do, we focus it on those places. And so, yeah, it's like I said, it's not an either or. We want to keep it. But we need to be strategic about it, considering we have to adapt to the way the world is, not necessarily the way we want it to be.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
We've been talking shop with Mike Wilson. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.